Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I am joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and we have John Hoyam with us, regular guest from 2020, back on the show for his first appearance in 2021.
No, I've been on in 2021.
You have been?
Yeah.
With Phil.
With Phil.
Yes, we introduced the Large Catechism.
Ago. Yeah.
Wow, I can't remember anything. That's horrible. Yeah. We are in Northwest Arkansas.
Which yeah, you have I think to throw the west.
The locals here want you to make sure that you say Northwest Arkansas, because apparently everything south of here, I've been told, is everything you expect Arkansas to be.
Oh, and you shouldn't say that.
That's.
What do you expect Arkansas to be, Caleb?
Good, middle America.
Okay.
Farmland, freedom.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. And we're actually all at a conference for the first time in over a year. We're at the Here We Still Stand Regional Conference in Northwest Arkansas. We advertised it on the show a little while back. It sold out, I think, within 3 weeks-ish, right? Or was even quicker than that, of being told that we could actually have a conference here and that we were local law and legislation was going to allow us to do that.
Well, it had been on the books. We just confirmed that we were going to be able to do it.
Right. And then so when we were able to make the tickets on sale, it went by fast. I think just stay tuned for announcements about future regional events. I think this is going to go pretty well, and that as time goes on, we're going to be able to do a couple of these around the country over the years. And so there might be one within driving or not too far flying distance from you in the near future. And I think that's about it for announcements wise. We are coming into the mid end of April. We've been walking through the Large Catechism. We did take a couple of breaks, starting with the Large Catechism. We did a Q&A right before the transition in, and then we had David Anderson on the show to talk about his new book. As soon as we finish up this section, we will probably end up taking a little bit of a break again. I think we're going to do some crossover recording while we're here in Arkansas. There's some more podcasters from the 1517 Podcast Network around, and so that'll be fun. If you don't listen to other shows on the network, we're going to have some of the hosts of shows like 30 Minutes, 40 Minutes on the show, and might encourage you to go check those out as well. All right, guys, we had Adam Francisco back on the show for the last two episodes. We made it through the Sixth Commandment, I think is what last week dropped. And so now we are on the Seventh and Eighth Commandments is what we should try to get through today, at least. Maybe we'll make it farther. We'll see. This has been one of the themes as you go through, is some of these can appear easy to complete right off the bat. And I think the seventh is one of those ones. When we did the small catechism, I brought this up as well. The seventh commandment reads, "Thou shalt not steal." And I think a lot of people are probably feeling pretty okay about "thou shalt not steal." I actually remember growing up, this is one of the first ones that I felt maybe publicly guilty about.
Yeah, and really. Do tell.
Say that if you have a dad who works around the house as much as you do, or has various construction projects on the property going on at one time, you make a lot of trips to Lowe's or Home Depot. Okay, and if you're walking around to Lowe's or Home Depot and you're a little kid, there are just loose buckets of screws, of bolts, of nuts, and things like that. And who really cares if you put a couple of screws in your pocket when you're walking down the aisles, until you then read the seventh commandment and you go, oh my gosh,
I'm going to bankrupt Lowe's. One screw at a time.
So Lowe's in Carson City, I owe you 25 cents or something like
that's
that.
That's funny.
But yeah, so let's just read this opening paragraph from Luther in the Large Catechism. After your person and spouse, temporal property comes next, that also God wishes to have protected and has commanded that no one shall subtract from or curtail his neighbor's possessions. For to steal is nothing else than to get possession of another's property wrongfully, which briefly comprehends all kinds of advantage in all sorts of trade, to the disadvantage of our neighbor. Now, this is indeed quite widespread and common, but so little regard is observed that it exceeds all measure, so that if all who are thieves and yet do not wish to be called such were to be hanged on gallows, the world would soon be devastated, and there would be a lack of both executioners and gallows. For as we have just said, to steal is to signify not only to empty our neighbor's coffer and pockets, but to be grasping in the market, in all stores, booths, wine and beer sellers, workshops, and in short, wherever there is trading or taking and giving of money for merchandise or labor.
I think one of the things about the seventh commandment that is interesting, we've said this about a lot of the other commandments, is that it seems pretty easy, right? Don't steal. Don't bonk somebody over the head and take their stuff. Don't walk into a store and grab something and put it in your pocket and walk out. But at the end of the day, when you sort of go through intent, when you go through all of the ramifications that this has as far as your desires and your thoughts and even the actual stealing of things that you might not consider stealing, this, like all the other commandments, is not only just a exhortation not to steal, but it's, like you said with your Lowe's example, it's very much a condemnation of who you are. Like, you're, when you hear this, when you hear this preached on, when, if you read the explanation that Luther gives here, which is one of the longer ones for this section, by the way, if you read the explanation that Luther gives here, you'll see, like he said right off the bat here, that if we were to hang everybody that's guilty of this commandment, everybody would be hanged. We wouldn't have enough gallows. We wouldn't have enough hangmen. Everybody'd be hanged here because we're all guilty of this. And I think it, again, we talked about this in the sixth commandment too, and especially in the fourth commandment too. What this reveals is that the purpose of this, of the giving the law, is at the end of the day to convict you of your sin. There certainly is an exhortation here. Thou shalt not steal. God takes that command seriously. You should not steal. And if you do steal, you're guilty of sinning against his law. But what Luther is explaining here and what he goes on to explain is not just the exhortation aspect of it, but the reality that we're all guilty of it.
I think in the first several paragraphs, the commonality, you know, of everybody doing this rings through very true. He then goes on to use examples of, like, that stealing may even constitute something like neglecting doing your work properly, or, you know, mispaying somebody, or all sorts of little things. And so he makes it, like you said, this is a common accusation. When you make something common, you really are highlighting the universal accusation of the law. But I think the universal part is also not downplayed by the severity. So he makes something which would be, in the civil realm, probably seemingly small, which is somebody's overpaying slight or overcharging for something that they know shouldn't by just slight margins, or somebody who's, you know, a master isn't watching over their work diligently, kind of slacks off here and there, or doesn't do something, or hides something.
I like the translation that talks about mechanics, which I wonder what
what a mechanic
what
was.
The German word is Luther's. A cart fixer? I don't know. But this, as it's translated here, it's mechanics or workmen or day laborers who just, you know, they just, even if they're working, who maybe aren't working as diligently as they could.
It's because there's a positive side to the obedience here as well, which is that we're not just supposed to avoid stealing from our neighbor, right, or harming his property, but also to improve our neighbor's property.
Yeah.
And leave to him what is his, and
well, improve and defend, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, the high bar of not stealing doesn't just extend to our sort of laziness and sloppiness with regard to our neighbor, but there's also a high standard of, you know, I should work to improve my neighbor's possessions and property as well. That none of us really live up to. I mean, because ultimately we're possessive and acquisitive creatures, right?
Yeah.
We want to hang on to and keep what is ours, which there is nothing wrong with that. But
well, how often do you see somebody who maybe doesn't have their life, say, like financially or work-wise, vocationally, put together as well as you or your family.
Not my problem.
And instead of like helping them, you just go, isn't our family so great? Or aren't we so great? Or look at what we've built. Look at what that's not an uncommon conversation that people would hear when you see somebody working a job less than yours or something like that. Mm-hmm. Isn't like, hey, how could I help them move up? It's how great is it that we succeeded?
And there might be people that make less money than you do, but manage their money, what they do make far, far better than others. And, I think the loss of community, like, especially in our society, like people don't care outside of small communities. Maybe they don't care how their neighbors are doing financially. They wouldn't know if something was broken at their neighbor's house that they needed help fixing.
Oh, that's true. No.
You know what I mean?
Well, especially if you're like, if you're in a city like you, right? You just see the apartment door.
Yeah.
Close. And that's it.
Exactly.
Open and close like quickly so that people can't look into your living room.
Yeah. How am I supposed to, help my neighbor improve, what he already possesses, you know?
Hmm. I think that is a community thing because I, for the first time in a long while, I live in a neighborhood where I know my neighbors. Like the lady down the street, when she's got a question about her car, if it's got air in the tires, even though her car is one of the newer Subarus that'll actually tell you the...
Which tire.
Which tire is low and if it's low.
She couldn't quite figure it out.
Brings it over and my neighbor across the street. So it is, I get it. I think one of the points that Luther makes here that I think is really interesting. He even is talking about in the Germany of his time that the civil laws are in place such to the level that you'd be hard-pressed to break this commandment in a very overt way, like by being a highway robber and getting away with it, right? And so his point is, I think he's saying, listen, this is... It'd be difficult to be like the greatest transgressor of this and to get away with this in civil society here. But getting more to the point, like what John was saying, that, you know, you're not, but on the whole, most of us aren't helping improve our neighbor's property. We're probably slacking off at work. We're probably slacking off in what we owe to not only our employers, but the patrons of the place and that type of thing. And I think that is, you know, this is one of the commandments that builds on, I think, a positive doctrine of vocation, whereas you might not see in the small, in the large catechism, okay, here's the section on vocation. You're going to get a lot of it here, that the your purpose of you going into your job is not just for you to make money to bring home to provide for your family, but you're actually providing a service to your employer, and in turn your employer is providing a service to greater society that people need. Mm-hmm. And that when you don't do this well, you're stealing from them.
I think when you skim off the top, you're trying to sort of at least take a little bit for free.
Yeah. Well, I think the example, I love whoever translated this to mechanics. Again, I don't know what the word is, but that's a great example to me because most people don't know how to do anything to their car. Like, know nothing about it. Open the hood. Well, I was just watching an old episode of Frasier with your mom, and
an engine.
His car broke down and he gets out and pops the hood and looks at the engine and gets back in the car. And she goes, what's wrong? The lady he's with goes, what's wrong with these? I don't know. It was mostly performatory for me to just go out and look at the engine and come sit back down. I have no idea what's wrong with it. And that's the case with most people. But at the same time, like if you do know a little bit about mechanical work on cars, my future son-in-law is a mechanic, so I'm not trying to bemoan mechanics. But you do know that oftentimes...
Yep. Things are overcharged.
Or not done...
To the same degree that you could do it yourself.
Or that you would do it if you were doing the work on your own piece of property, right? So you have a pride in your piece of property that if you could do the work, you know, you would check this, you would check that, you would check the other. If this would lead to that, you'd check that. And one of the things you often find out is that
you know, they do exactly what you ask and no more and no less. Yeah. And maybe forgot to put the new crush washer on when they change your oil and this type of thing.
Yeah. Tire shops are notorious for like breaking your lug studs and
that you don't know unless you know a little bit about it. And I think that's why some of these examples are good. Like contractors, you know, most people don't know how to fix their house. So if you're if you're like an honorable contractor and you really try to do well by your client, that's really a service to the world of people who can't do anything to their house on their own. But the fact that so many people know that you can't or that you wouldn't recognize does sometimes lead to a lot of shortcuts. And Luther is pointing out that that's theft. Right. That's theft.
I think, and to some degree, people know it is. So, like, if you go to a car dealership, you know, a lot of people will call them stealerships. Like, that's...
You worked at one of those, didn't you?
I did work at a stealership. And, I mean, there's some truth to it, right? Like, we knew how much the car cost us, how much we could sell it for, and then this range in between. Mm-hmm. And the game was to always get people to overpay. That's the goal of the manager.
Or to pay as high to the top end as they could.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's never a one price, and you're always trying to be towards the top.
Yeah, whereas most people who walk into a dealer just desperately want to know what's the price of the car.
Right. Like, well, and then it's even worse if you
almost desperately want to know what's the price of the car.
And then it applies to even, you know, repairs at a dealership and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just, it's certainly interesting. So you know it, but then you can't help it. Like, you'll still go. So, like, when somebody goes, they'll call it a dealership, but they know they still have to go.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, let's say, most likely the vast majority of mechanics and contractors do great work by their clients and always try the hardest they can to make sure. But Luther's point, I think, here is that if you are in those roles and you don't, you're actually doing a greater disservice, not just to the person, but to society, because society needs your vocations to keep operating.
Right. Right. No, that's a good point.
Love mechanics, love contractors, but I just throw that out there.
Yeah, skilled labor is great, and a lot of times they don't have, there's incentive to find more things that are wrong that might not be wrong from above them, even, right? And so, maybe we just sum it. I mean, like you said, it's long. It's also one of the more repetitive. He gives a lot of examples as you go through, continues to talk about, like, that it's so universal and, like you said, but also very harshly punished when it's obvious. Mm-hmm. Talks about harsh punishment versus, like, just deceiving people.
Well, this is like murdering. When you actually sin against this commandment, the way we sort of all read it on the surface level, society has set up mechanisms to punish you for that.
Right.
Right? Likely you're not going to get away with murder. Likely you're not going to get away with actual blatant highway robbery.
Yeah. So let's just read some of these last paragraphs here, and then we can go to the eighth commandment. So it says, "Let this suffice as an explanation of what stealing is, that it not be taken too narrowly, but be made to extend as far as we have to do with our neighbors, and briefly and in summary, as in the former commandments, it is herewith forbidden in the first place to do our neighbor any injury or wrong in whatever manner supposable by curtailing or forestalling or withholding his possessions and property, or even to consent or allow such a thing, but to interpose and prevent it. And on the other hand, it is commanded that we advance and improve his possessions, and in case he suffers want, that we help communicate and lend both to friends and to foes. Whoever now seeks and desires good works will find here more than enough, such as are heartily acceptable and pleasing to God, and in addition are favored and crowned with excellent blessing, that we are to be richly compensated for all that we do to our neighbor's good, and from friendship, as King Solomon teaches in Proverbs 19, he hath pity upon the poor, lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will pay him again. Here then, you have a rich Lord, who is certainly sufficient for you, and who will not suffer you to come short in anything you want. Thus you can, with a joyful conscience, enjoy 100 times more than you could scrape together with unfaithfulness and wrong. Now whoever does not desire the blessing will find wrath and misfortune."
Luther sounds like a early capitalist. Which wouldn't work unless you have a general understanding that we don't steal from each other. We exchange fairly. And that's part of how capitalism is supposed to work.
Yeah.
Part of how it was theorized in the first place.
Yeah.
Which gets to, that's actually a good lead into the Eighth Commandment.
Yeah, because fairly here is based on need. Like, so if you extrapolate supply and demand out to have and have not, or have and need.
Yeah, and what capitalism does is it puts a price on a product or a service, and supply and demand has to do.
Well, it puts a price on a product or service that you either have and other people need, or that you need and other people have.
Right.
Right, that you can't provide on your own.
Right, and then supply and demand modulates that price.
Right.
And
it supposes that the neighbor might have not only commodity, but a skill you do not have as well, right? And
yeah.
So that the society as a whole benefits when people from, multifaceted sets of skills are able to exchange those towards a mutual good end.
Yeah, it's a way of sharing, actually, what we have.
Yes. Yeah.
Unlike what people maybe usually think, but...
Right. Okay, the Eighth Commandment. When we talked about this one in the Small Catechism, I think we talked about this one as like one of the most blatantly obvious ones that is engaged in today, or at least is given opportunity to engage in regularly. So this is, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Over and above our own body, spouse, and temporal possessions, we have yet another treasure, namely honor and good report, the illustrious testimony of an upright and unsullied name and reputation, with which we cannot dispense. For it is intolerable to live among men in open shame and general contempt. Therefore, God wishes the reputation, good name, and upright character of our neighbor to be taken away or diminished as little as his money and possessions, that every one may stand in his integrity before wife, children, servants, and neighbors.
I just don't think we think this way anymore.
Maybe
it was so important for him to write this because we never did. But at the same time, I mean, listen, in that first section there, you read it, but think about what he's saying there. He's saying that you ought to consider your honor and the good rapport that you have with other people as valuable to you as anything else that is in your life, including your spouse or your own body.
Well, it really points out that I thought this was right too, that it is insufferable to live in your community if that's been taken from you.
Yeah, if you have a community.
Like yeah. That, yeah. And I think that's true. Like it makes life is nothing but miserable if your reputation is being attacked constantly.
Yeah. And so his encouragement in the second one is to take that seriously on behalf of not just yourself, but for your neighbor, right? So if you think about it, it's intolerable for you to live within your community without any honor, without a good rapport, or with a bad name. He's asking you now to extrapolate that beyond yourself to your neighbor and say, the next time you decide to attack your neighbor publicly, to attack your neighbor's good name publicly, maybe consider how intolerable it is to live like that. And this is what God, and he literally says, this is what God is asking you to do, to really think twice before you diminish somebody's good name. And if you have no actual cause to do so, don't do it. Holy cow. Can you imagine, like, if people took this seriously on the old socials, how much that would change the character of the way we interact with each other online?
It wouldn't exist.
Yeah. Social media wouldn't exist.
Social media is premised essentially on the violation of the Eighth Commandment.
It's to leverage your neighbor.
That's a good quote. I'm going to write that down.
That is good. Yeah, he's going to steal it. Watch out.
No, that's good. It's all good ideas are meant to be stolen. I probably stole it from somebody. It is interesting to connect this with the Second Commandment too, right? So when we do not take the name of the Lord our God in vain, we're speaking properly using God's name. And likewise, those creatures made in his image must be spoken of truthfully as well. And so as we have a high standard of attributing things to God, we don't want to attribute things to God that he has not said, things that he has not done. And that's what it means to take his name in vain. Likewise, we want to speak truthfully about what our neighbors
have said and done.
And so there's this kind of... you know, not taking God's name in vain, we protect God's name. Not bearing false witness against our neighbor, we protect their name and their reputation.
And I think one of the common motivators to violate this is your own gain. So this is like, so when you steal a neighbor's possessions, you can gain from it, obviously, yeah, financially, monetarily, or the gain there is very obvious what that is. When you sully your neighbor's name, the gain is that your own reputation increases, or that the trust that whoever you're gossiping to about is taken from that person and put in you.
Yeah, I mean, that's where gossip comes from usually, is people who gossip have a need to sort of exploit and fill themselves with the drama, because the drama makes them feel good. And in the process, you sully a person's name by spreading around perhaps false information about them.
Right.
You know, gossiping comes from a lack that you have.
Well, and you can also gain, you know, maybe somebody's ear or trust, mm-hmm, by having this secret information or this, you know, it's a special type of gnosis. It's religious knowledge.
And it's the same thing that's going on with the second commandment, to go back to that again, which is when we misuse God's name, we're trying to steal his power.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly true.
You know, can we exploit God for our ends?
Yes.
For what we want to do. Likewise, you know, can I exploit my neighbor's name and reputation for whatever I want?
I think some of it's more than that now. I think that we have a hard time even taking the first paragraph of this seriously and protecting our own name and our own name and reputation. And I think the reason Luther starts out with sort of trying to convince people of the need to protect your own is because it's a decent path to convincing you to protect others too. But I think more so than any time in my life, today people need to be more convinced of how important it is to protect their own name and reputation first.
And Luther's not opposed to starting, you know, with me.
Right.
You know, no. Luther says, pray for yourself.
Yeah.
He said, you know, when we get to the creed, I believe that God has created me.
Yep.
And so it's not bad to sort of place yourself in these kinds of discussions. It's not bad to look out and look after the reputation of your name in the world, because that will help you understand then how to relate to your neighbor and protect your neighbor's reputation.
So here's another, unless you were going to say something, Dad, this is another interesting paragraph as we go down. These are line numbers. So this would be 265 for anybody who has page numbers that would be following along. Therefore, to avoid this vice, we should note that no one is allowed to publicly judge and reprove his neighbor, although he may see him sin, unless he is commanded to judge and to reprove. For there is a great difference between these two things, judging sin and knowing sin. You may indeed know it, but you are not to judge it. I can indeed see and hear that my neighbor sins, but I have no command to report it to others. Now, if I rush in judging and passing a sentence, I fall into a sin which is greater than his own. But if you know it and do nothing else, then turn to your ears into a grave and cover them until you are appointed by the judge and to punish by virtue of that office.
Of your office is the translation I have. I think this is, again, Luther acknowledging that, you know, within civil society, there are vocations set up to be
punish,
you're the one that hears the evidence, and you're the one that adjudicates the evidence, and now you're the one that judges the evidence, and now you're the one that punishes based on the evidence. And if that's not your vocation, even if you quote unquote know of some other person's guilt, it is not your job to publicly adjudicate that guilt and or try to get some recompense to come down upon them based on it.
All right.
Boy, again, what an odd admonition for our age. I mean, that if social media was set up to break the Eighth Commandment, it was also set up to not listen to this.
Modern news reporting is designed to give you a bunch of information to then become a judge on it before. So, like, you know, it's commonly called the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
People, we cast down sentences on people maybe even thousands of miles away from us. Without all the facts, based on hearsay.
Wasn't this, I mean, I'm not trying to get political here, but isn't this what canceling is?
Right. Yeah, is to have a judgment so severe that you actually exercise a punishment.
Yeah.
As well. And so...
not somebody that has been charged and then taken to somebody whose vocation it is to adjudicate those claims and to judge those claims and then to dole out punishment for those
Well, and
claims.
What does Luther do here to the idea that silence is violence? It tells you to keep your mouth shut until you need to, like until you're commanded to open it.
Yeah, it seems like in our society, we lack so much sort of mutual trust that... you know, we don't have those natural mechanisms of actually adjudicating whether somebody's guilty of something. I mean, obviously, we have the criminal justice system. But, and in the church, we have Matthew 18, you know, go and confront somebody about wrongdoing privately first and then gather other Christians to talk about it if that is unsuccessful. And then only then do you start to make it public that something wrong has been done, if it needs to be talked about publicly at all. You know, that's a sort of like cultural context where people trust each other enough to value one another's names and reputations. But in a kind of a social media environment like our own, you know, we don't have the kind of connection to one another.
Well, and when I think that the confronting the individual from Matthew 18 is a great example, right? Where certainly maybe here, if you see your neighbor sin and something needs to be said, maybe start with them, right? Yeah. Maybe actually go talk to them, have the courage to do that. Social media and being online allows you to show everybody that that's what you're doing. So you
never talk to them.
Yeah.
You talk to everybody else.
Yes.
Before you talk to the offending person.
Or even tag them. And then when somebody says something, you say, I'm holding them accountable.
Yeah.
But that's not going to them.
So and it all sounds very righteous, doesn't it?
By the way, yes. He says in here, I have paragraph 271 on this, as he defines false witness then is everything which cannot be properly proved. Making a claim on social media about somebody else under the guise of holding them accountable to their sin is not proving that claim.
Right.
And according to Luther, then it's false witness. And if you go on to 272 here, he says, therefore, what is not manifest upon sufficient evidence, no one shall make public or declare for truth. And in short, whatever is secret shall be allowed to remain secret, or at any rate should be secretly reproved, as we shall hear. So in other words, if you actually do think you have a claim against somebody's name or reputation, but you don't have enough evidence for it and it's secret, you go ask them in secret to clarify. And if need be, to reprove them in secret, unless you have ample, sufficient evidence. And then you don't take it to the court of public opinion. You actually then, if they've done something horrendous or wrong and you have sufficient evidence, you take it to the authorities whose vocation it is to do something about that.
Yeah. How often does something happen where, I mean, this has happened to me, where you're tagged on social media and it's, how could you do X with this person?
Yeah.
Or how could you have this person on a podcast? Or how could you?
What have you done that somebody would say such things about you, Caleb?
What have I done? No, not me. Oh. No.
When did you stop beating your wife, Senator?
Yeah. Yes. When did you last beat your wife?
Yeah. Yeah. What did I do? I had Steve Paulson on a podcast. Oh, okay. That was...
you awful person.
Yes. So, let's see here. Should we go further down? You were just at 271, right?
Mm-hmm.
My app just crashed.
He gets into gossiping here, and I think that's basically what we've been describing this whole time, is that most of what we do for the sake of, you know, bringing to light someone else's sin is just gossiping, which is the breaking of this commandment, which is destroying their reputation, definition being that there's no actual evidence for it. It's just what I've heard. This is what everybody thinks of this person. Aren't they awful? And it's devastating. I mean, it was devastating before social media. It was in smaller communities, it was devastating through actual gossip.
I mean, this is another one where we can say we've all done this.
Absolutely.
We can sit here on a podcast and say how this happens, but we've all participated in it. Whether on social media or at our own tables at home or
the college campus.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a small community that is kind of high trust, but guess what? It's totally susceptible to gossip.
Well, there's groups of people. Oh, yeah.
clicks.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yep.
Guess who did what? You know, it's just...
That, yes, that is a part of life there, isn't it? And so, the accusation stands again. Well, we have time. Should we go to the ninth commandment?
Well, ninth and tenth are put together. I think we should cap this off, and I think you should cap it off with the, how Luther ends this, when he basically says that if you want to know what good works are, essentially, well, he says, which please God and bring abundant blessing, stop binding in the world with blind accusations against the saints. Against other saints.
This
you
is
can the- do nothing. You can do nothing worse to a man, really, than to destroy his reputation. Do nothing better for a man than defend his reputation.
I think it's a great exhortation
at this point. Yeah. And a condemnation, right? Because you're going to hear both of those. You're going to hear the times...
It's been done to you.
It's been done to you, and you're going to hear the times that you've done it to others.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the last line here is great. For there's nothing on or in the entire man which can do both greater and more extensive good or harm in spiritual and temporal matters than the tongue, though it is the least and feeblest member. Yeah.
Or the strongest.
Right. Mightier than the sword.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Thinking Fellows podcast. It has been great to read through these commandments yet another time, this time in the Large Catechism and Luther's expanded explanations. Are great in part because he just uses so many examples of what these violations look like. So when we read through the Small Catechism, you do get a great picture of just very plainly what everything is. And then the Large Catechism, Luther takes the time to make sure nobody can escape any one of these.
So if you want to feel the accusation of the law, just read Luther's explanations of the Ten Commandments in the Large Catechism.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. We're almost to the close of the commandments. We'll get through 9 and 10 here on the next episode. If you'd like to support the Thinking Fellows and the efforts of 1517 generally, you can go to 1517.org/donate. If you, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, are a listener of the Thinking Fellows and aren't aware of or haven't listened to any of the other shows on the network, you can go to 1517.org/podcast to see all of the shows there. And if you find anything you like, they're all available on your favorite podcasting apps. You can just search the name or click the links on the website and you can subscribe there. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Bye.